This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Biomega Fish Oil from Biotics Research. For over 40 years, Biotics Research has been providing the highest quality supplements, surpassing industry standards. Biomega Fish Oil contains therapeutic doses of vital omega-3s in the triglyceride form, which is highly bioavailable. Biotics Research ensures maximum purity and freshness by managing their fish oils from catch to capsule, verified by rigorous independent testing. For more information, go to drhoffman.com/biotics research. That's drhoffman.com/biotics research for Biomega Fish Oil. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman talking to Dr. Tim Noakes. Dr. Noakes was the subject of great controversy because of what has now been termed the Noakes trial. It goes down in the annals of history along with the Scopes monkey trial in which literally beliefs were on trial. The ability to stand up for solid science was tried in a famous courtroom battle. And this is an ordeal that our guest Tim Noakes underwent for a period of 4 years back and forth. We left him in suspense in part one, in the middle, where he was charged, basically with, practicing, unconventional nutrition, and also ostracized by his colleagues at the university. And so tell us what then transpired, Dr. Noakes.
So the committee then had this information. They had the information that the university had turned it back on me. And they had this report from one so-called expert who had drawn up the South African dietary guidelines, but was not an expert in nutrition and was not an expert in other things like ethics, which was kind of claimed that she was. So the committee should have taken all this information and invited me to come and speak to them and say, listen, this is why I don't think I should be charged, and to give a chance to present my side of the case. They never did that, which completely breaks all the rules of proper judicial actions.
That sounds more like a sort of a Soviet trial. You know, it's like where the charges are read, the prosecuting witnesses parade in front of the judge, and there's no opportunity to offer a defense by the very subject of the trial. I mean, that's just very bizarre.
Well, it gets even worse because the head of the committee is the head of ethics at the University of Witwatersrand in the Steve Biko Chair of Ethics. Steve Biko is one of the more famous South Africans, and she's in this chair. And it gets worse because a year later, when the trial starts, she is informing the prosecution's chief lawyer what he should be doing to prosecute me.
Well,
which is astonishing.
Yeah. That's a form of collusion and conflict of interest that just, I mean, it makes your head spin. That's amazing.
That's right. So anyway, I decided that I wasn't going to, I could have just said, listen, I resign as a medical doctor and accept the charge. And I would have paid R1,000 or something like that. And then I probably wouldn't have lost my, in fact, they offered me the opportunity before the trial started. They said, would you go for a lesser charge? I said, no.
Yeah.
Because
cop a plea, they call it.
Yeah. Because I said, you've made this public and my whole career is now on the line and I'm going to fight this. And I was just so fortunate that the one I'd worked with one lawyer who's a medical doctor, Dr. Rocky Ramdas, who's just a giant of a man. And we're friends, we're brothers. We consider ourselves to be family nowadays. And he said, Tim, I'll defend you for nothing. And within 6 weeks before the trial began, and one of the senior counsels in South Africa, one of the most revered lawyers in South Africa, phoned me and he said, Tim, you've been set up. This is it's a witch hunt. I'm going to defend you for nothing.
Wow.
Now, without those
you became a cause celeb, overnight.
Yeah. And they then ran the trial. And they were just in a different league than any of the other lawyers that we were up against. So the trial went for 25 days in which I and my expert witnesses presented 12 days of testimony, including 4 days of cross-examination. And they could not budge us on the information that we gave. So we presented the argument for the low-carb diet and low-carb diet for children. And not one thing was contested. Not one piece of evidence was contested. So
I just wanted to ask you, who were some of your expert witnesses? Because people were incensed across the world and flew in on your behalf from all corners of the world, including some experts that perhaps are familiar to some of our audience. Who was there for you?
Well, absolutely. Well, Nina Teicholz, who wrote the book Big Fat Surprise,
flew in from New York,
and she was utterly astonishing. She was so good that the prosecution's chief would cross-examine her. He just gave up. It was so funny because after she'd given testimony, he sort of looked at her and said, "So tell me, Mrs. Teicholz, how long are you going to be in Cape Town for?" So she said, "No, she's leaving in a few days." So he said, "Well, I hope you enjoy your stay, and I hope you've enjoyed the stay." And that was the end of the cross-examination.
Oh, boy.
Because he was out of his
depth. He just kind of wilted, and that was it.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm going to tell you another little story as we end. But anyway, Zoe Harcom came from Wales, and she just completed her PhD. And she'd published by then three papers showing that the dietary guidelines, which were accepted in the United States in 1977 and in the UK in 1984, had no scientific basis whatsoever. She said, had you been around in those days, what evidence was there? And she went through all the evidence, and it did not support the idea that we should change our diets. Mm-hmm. And the third lady is Dr. Corinne Zinn, who's a former South African whom I taught in her dietetics courses. And she told me, you told me of all these carb stories. And so she went to New Zealand, and she had a funny experience because her professor called her in about 4 years ago and said to her, "Listen, Karen, there's a lot of interest in this high-fat diet. I think it's absolute nonsense. Why don't you go search it and tell me?" And so she went, thinking she was going to find there was no basis.
She was going to debunk it. Exactly. Right.
And when she came back, she said, "I'm sorry. This is the truth." Mm-hmm. And he is the professor, has completely converted, and their whole department converted. And now he's one of the major proponents in New Zealand of the low carbohydrate diet. So she was the third expert witness, and they were just amazing.
And South Africa is a relatively small country, but in fact, the world's standards for diet, many of these are government issued guidelines, were literally on trial in that small courtroom. Isn't that correct?
That's what we tried to do. We wanted the final decision to be that there is evidence that the low-carbohydrate diet is the diet that we should be prescribing. Unfortunately, they wouldn't go that far. They did say that it is evidence-based, which was the key, because they said that there was no evidence-based for the low-carbohydrate diet. And we were able to prove that there is a lot of evidence. And in fact, there's no evidence for the opposite, for the low-fat diet. So we achieved that. And again, when I give lectures now, I'd say, I'm the only person in the world who's ever put his ideas before a legal group as we did. And I said, I've been tested, and no one could find anything wrong with what I said. No, you're never going to have a lecture from another person like that.
This is not the place to debate scientific issues. The courtroom is very ill-suited for that. Why isn't it that there was just a civil dialogue that occurred? There are many scientific controversies. There's global warming, for example. All these should be decided not in a court of law, but, in medical journals and in academic conferences and among colleagues in the standard way that science advances. Why couldn't that happen?
I don't know, but I think it's something to do with the postmodernism, and that's the way we practice medicine in the social sciences. And universities have become so dominated by this idea that there is no truth, that the truth is provided by the dominant grouping. And so the dominant grouping has a truth that makes them dominant. And therefore, as a white male, heterosexual South African, I have no right to say anything, because the reason that I have a truth is because I've been in a position of power and privilege for the last 50 or 60 years, and that my truth is what is sustaining the social inequality in South Africa.
So it's politicized.
It's politicized. And now that is how we are running the social sciences in the world at universities. And the person who's really taught me this is Jordan Peterson from a Canadian university. And I can't speak for what's happening in Canada and USA, but that's what happened to me. Mm-hmm. That you can't talk truth to these people. They're not interested. They will just smear you, and so that people will not be able to listen to you ever again, because Tim Noakes he's a crank.
He's radioactive. Yeah.
Exactly. And he's lost it. He's completely lost the plot, and there's no science. Mm-hmm. He's a pseudoscientist. Mm-hmm. When it turns out they're actually the pseudoscientists and they're the quacks and the cranks, because there's no evidence to support what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the issue. But the other issue, there's clearly industry is involved behind it. So in my case, mm-hmm. we know that some of the expert witnesses against me have links to an organization called the International Life Sciences Institute, which is a Coca-Cola front.
You'll see.
And sugar and Coca-Cola are very strong in South Africa, mm-hmm. as they are in Australia. Mm-hmm. And the case of a doctor is in Australia. My great friend Gary Fetke has also been in a very similar position to me, and he's not allowed to talk about diet to his patients. And he's been vilified as well. And it's very, very similar that they're very powerful industry organizations behind it, but they're hidden. And so we don't really see it. And that's really the only way I can see why was I not allowed to talk to my faculty about these things. It's only now when we've won the case that the University of Cape Town faculty and particularly the medical students want to hear. They want to hear the story.
Well, I understand that this process went on for years and years. And in fact, after you won, there was an appeal of the decision, which then you had to push back against. Is that correct? And it was only recently in the last few months that you were vindicated.
Well, we were vindicated in April last year. And then the committees, the HPCSA informed us that they were going to form a new committee. So in other words, they didn't like their first committee's decision. So they're going to form a new committee, and we're going to have an appeal. And which we've had that appeal. We had it in February, end of February. And we were meant to get the ruling from that grouping last week, end of last week. They still haven't given us the ruling. So we don't know what the position is.
Are you confident of the outcome at this point?
Absolutely. In the presentations, there was nothing that they could produce that was different, and they could not go over the scientific evidence, because the 12 days of scientific evidence, that committee could not decide, because they only had one doctor on the committee and they had two lawyers. So how could that group overturn now the voluminous medical information that we had given? We're pretty certain that as long as it's above board, we win. But if it's below board and this committee is corrupt, then we could lose it. In which case, we go to the High Court. Mm-hmm. And there it will really be embarrassing, because all these bad actions that the HPCSA has done, and my university and other universities and individuals, will be exposed.
Yeah. And because there is such a thing as discovery, you know, when there's a trial and you can actually obtain records and communications and emails and so on, that reveal that literally there's a conspiracy.
That's correct. And the one group of emails that we haven't been able to get is between the HPCSA lady, the person who represents the Dietetics Association on the HPCSA, and who she was colluding with, because she set up the trial. But we've never seen her emails. The university would not release them. And they've even claimed that they've been destroyed, which, why would you destroy emails? So you're quite right. The end result would be very, very damaging for dietetics and for the Health Professional Council and for people at least three or four universities in South Africa. There's a lot riding on it. And I just hope that they don't win the case, because they will be exposed terribly if we lose the case.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause, because we want to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this message with you. So here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158. That's 800-982-9158. or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuous free resource to you. And now back to our guest, Professor Tim Noakes. Turning back a little bit to diet, you know, the devil's advocate argument might be that, okay, fine, you know, some people, and you are a case in point, do very well on a very low-carb, high-fat diet. But don't some people do okay on moderate carbohydrates, depending on their genetics, their activity levels, or even their microbiome? Is it possible that, you know, different strokes for different folks?
Absolutely. But if you take the United States of America, we know that at least 50% of Californians are insulin resistant, even today, by the most simple diagnostic tests. Mm-hmm. When you do more sophisticated testing, I think you'll find that 70 to 75% of people mm-hmm. are insulin resistant. And they simply cannot eat high carbohydrate diets for more than 10 or 15 years because then you get the negative consequences. So I think you're quite right. But if I was to ask how many Americans can avoid eating the low-carb diet and be healthy, it might be 20% maximum. Mm-hmm. And the problem is you don't know, unless you do proper testing, you don't know. So you eat this high-carbohydrate diet for 30 years and you develop your diabetes, which we now know we can reverse. As long as you get onto a low-carbohydrate diet, we can reverse it and prevent it progressing any further. But you don't have to get to that state. As long as we identify you early on, insulin-resistant, your glucose tolerance is impaired, your insulin is rising, you're becoming hyperinsulinemic, all you have to do is just cut the carbs a little bit and you'll be fine. So the tragedy is it's such an easy solution, but people don't yet get it. But you accept there are some people who can eat a high carbohydrate diet. There are some people who do well on a plant-based diet, but they're not the majority by a long, long way.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about some of the research that the Noakes Foundation is now undertaking.
Thank you very much. We're really excited by the research. Originally, our focus was on how to reverse type 2 diabetes and what happens. So we raised about 6 million rand from some wonderful donors in your country, in the United States, and just to thank them, the real altruists, and we can't survive without the altruists. And our focus is on what happens when you take a person with type 2 diabetes and you put them on the low carbohydrate diet. Why do they now normalize their glucose control? And so we have a group of people who we will be studying going forward in a randomized control trial in which some of them with diabetes will use a low carbohydrate diet and others will continue to use their standard medications. And we're literally studying every component of their bodies, including the microbiome, but much more than that. Everything, the hormonal basis, the muscle function, pancreatic fat, liver fat, how the liver produces glucose, gluconeogenesis, and so on. So we're putting these people through testing that probably hasn't been done on diabetics ever in history. And we're putting them on the diet and following what happens. And we hope that we'll be able to show that these are the biochemical changes that occur as you become more and more glucose controlled on the low carbohydrate diet. So that is, it's a focus. That's a very expensive study. The other study, which we're about to start, which we've been working on for about 3 years to get the groundwork done, is of 200 people in the poorest communities in South Africa. And we will do a randomized control trial in which half of them will be randomized to the diet that we believe is healthy and which promotes real foods and more carnivorous type diet with plenty of vegetables, but much more meat and eggs and dairy. And we'll compare them to a group that continues to eat the high sugar junk processed diet that is typical in our poorest communities. And we believe that we will show astonishing health results in that because we've seen within 6 weeks of converting in non-randomized controlled trials, we've seen huge changes. And that will show us that the biggest problem we have in South Africa is the poor diet eaten by the poorest people. Mm-hmm. And that if we would just invest our money in improving the quality of the foods that they eat, we will reduce the cost, the long-term cost to the long-term medical costs in South Africa.
That's a really a marvelous set of projects. And we want to give a heads up about the Noakes Foundation. Where can people find out more about it?
We do have our website, and I must say that. So those are the two main research focuses. The other focus, which we really realized about a year ago, was that medical doctors are terribly interested now in getting taught about the low-carb diet. And so we've started a nutrition network, which launches on May the 1st, in which we are offering education for doctors who want to prescribe the low-carb diet. And
internationally, it's without borders. It's not just about South Africa.
Absolutely. And every day we get more doctors from around the world who say we want to be part of it and we want to lecture on the course. So it's very exciting. It's an internet-based course, and we really think it's going to make a huge difference, because we know that every doctor we convert converts 10,000-20,000 patients, and they are the best advert for this diet is the doctors. And we realize that we're not going to change the diet of people from the top. The governments are not going to do it because they're too in bed with the food industry that are causing the problem. It's only going to happen when we have the patients who got changed, and they're going to change the doctors. That's been happening. It's happened hugely in this country. I must tell you that we have one Facebook page in South Africa, in Cape Town, which has 1.2 million members. And that's a Banting Facebook page, which didn't exist 3 years ago.
That's super impressive.
Now, those patients come to the doctor and they say, I'm not interested in your medicines. I want the Banting diet. And now the doctors are realizing that if they want to get patients, that this is what they must do. They have to know about the low-carb diet.
Well, that's great. I mean, that's really the way I think we have to drive this, not top-down, but bottom-up in a grassroots effort. I wanted to ask you also, you know, you're an exercise physiologist. You're a marathoner, an ultra-marathoner, tremendous background personally in athleticism. What about the impact of the low-carb, high-fat diet on athletic performance? Is there a kind of a renaissance among athletes in embracing this diet, and are we seeing positive results?
Yeah, that is almost as big as the other changes. And I was speaking to some people yesterday, and they said, you know, in 5 years' time, everyone will be doing this diet. It'll be across the board, because you're just so much healthier. And when you're an athlete, you're stressing your body every day. And when you're eating a high carbohydrate diet, you've got an inflamed body that doesn't recover properly. Injuries are more prevalent and your recovery is poor, as I've indicated. When people go on this diet, their performance may not improve, but their general health improves. And that's key, so that they have fewer injuries. They can train harder for longer without injuries and without illnesses. And so it's really taking off. And we see so many world-class athletes adopting this diet. I'll tell you, for example, I was speaking to some cricketers in India, and India is the home of cricket now.
Right.
And I was chatting to, they happen to have a tournament which has athletes from all over the world who in the cricketing nations. And there were two English guys who were chatting to me on the Skype, and they're world-class players, top players in England. And they said, we've done it. We know. It's the low-carb diet is essential for cricket performance. Now, who would have thought that? 5 years ago, the cricket, the most staid sport, the most resistant to change. But these guys are world-class athletes, and they realize now if you want to be a world-class athlete, you have to follow this diet.
Also coming from a culture which is really a high-carb, low animal protein culture.
Precisely. Exactly. And so we're converting, and the number of world-class cricket teams which are now following this. There are soccer teams around the world that are doing it. The biggest change is in athletes exercising more than the marathon for more than 2 hours. They've embraced it dramatically. And particularly the Ironman in Hawaii, which is event obviously lasts 8 hours. I don't think you can win that event anymore unless you're a high fat diet eater.
Well, we're awaiting perhaps yet another book from you. Which is the sequel to The Lore of Running, but The Lore of Running updated, 40 years later, wherein you do a 180 on dietary recommendations. That's much anticipated. Well, great. What's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Where can we find more resources? We talked about the Noakes Foundation website. Do you have a personal website as well, or is there a place where people can find out more about your books?
The Noakes Foundation is my where we put all our stuff. For example, there's 81 videos of my trial evidence that we gave in the trial, and my and our expert witnesses. So there's 81 videos of 20 minutes or so, which really cover the whole of nutrition. And they are an amazing course. And people are, in fact, using it as a course in nutrition in some universities in the United States. I'm also on Twitter. I'm very active on Twitter. And in fact, for the last few months, I've been kind of, that's my business, is being answering questions on Twitter. And it's at Prof Tim Noakes.
Ad Prof so Tim Noakes.
People can, you know, they can follow directly.
At Prof Tim Noakes, with a, Tim, like an at sign. Okay.
Yeah, that's correct. And the only reason I haven't started the fourth edition, or the fifth edition of Law of Nutrition, is I've been swamped with information from Twitter. It is the most incredible way to collect information. In fact, you know, 90% of the information I presented at the trial, I access because people had informed me about it on Twitter for various reasons.
Yeah, it's a great communications venue, you know, when you get past all the insults.
Exactly.
You know, I get a lot of heads up. You know, people send me articles and tell me about fascinating potential new guests, and you've been a fascinating guest. I really want to thank you for being so generous with your time and sharing this information with us. And I also want to thank you for being so courageous as to undertake what must have been a tremendous personal ordeal for you. Thanks so much for joining us, Professor Tim Noakes. It's really been a pleasure.
But it's been all my pleasure, Ronald. I really appreciate the time you gave me and fantastic questions, a lovely discussion. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to tell you my story. And I hope that the audience will appreciate it and love it and perhaps read Law of Nutrition to learn the whole story about what's been happening in South Africa in the trial of the century.
Indeed. And that's no exaggeration. Thank you so much. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. As you know, this is a vital time to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to support immune health. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Immune Support Protocol, my supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Best medicine is preventive medicine. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information. drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the immune support protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our supplement starter kit, heart health protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get free priority shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.